Before we get into the idea of hub cities and everything that the NHL has going on right now as far as modeling and planning goes, what's your day-to-day look like right now?
Well, I thought Zoom was just on a camera. Your kid went zoom, zoom, you know, with a little truck. And so I'm doing zooming Zoom calls here. We've already had three calls this morning. Mm-hmm. I'd rather be dealing with a second round of playoffs right now and getting criticized by your guys this morning for that call we made last night in the third game of the second round for that goal interference no one agrees with. But no, it's there's a lot of prep calls here and everyone's holding on for hope, and we're trying to come up with a scenario which would work, all hoping that things are going to clear up here. No one knows. It's interesting having dealt with a couple of lockouts, and I was even part of a team back in 92 when there was a strike for 10 days.
Yeah,
we were in first with the Rangers, and that just changed everything, just those 10 days we had off with when we came back. This one, though, is totally different. It's so out of our control, and everybody's dealing with issues of back to work. And we, as you know, we floated the thoughts about having an early draft, and I know it kind of screws up everybody's thinking, but it's trying to get through to everybody is that there's not going to be a normal anymore. When you come back, the draft is not going to be normal. So whatever happens, so it's we're trying to just talk a little bit of hockey, maybe take some anxiety out of the kids who are going to get drafted, talk some hockey, turn the faucet on a little bit at a time, just like society's trying, all the governors, presidents, prime minister, trying to figure out how to come back from this. And we were thinking, how can we come back from this slowly but surely, and maybe that's one way we could come back and put some interest into the game and solve some things. But then again, it does throw a little bit of a corkscrew into guys' thinking. So the thoughts have been all over the map by managers, and I've probably talked to 20 managers in the last 48 hours about this.
It's a good way to frame it, Coley. Get used to the unusual, because that's what it's going to be at every stage of the game here. I'm curious about one thing. What goes into the thinking? We're talking about hub locations for resumption of play, a few different markets, a handful of them. What do you look for as far as a hub location goes?
Well, there's a number of criteria. You know, is it a friendly hub? You know, what state is friendly? What province is friendly? What are they dealing with? Obviously, you look at the New York area, it's not very friendly. And you look at Alberta, it seems fairly friendly. We need to have an NHL arena. We don't want to put it into there was some talk about, you know, North Dakota and some other sites. We need an NHL arena that's game friendly, that's all set up and ready to go for broadcasting for NHL games. They need four dressing rooms in those arenas to play the number of games they need to play each day. The hotels need to be adequate and what our players need. So there's a number of criteria. I'm probably missing some, but mm-hmm. Events have their hands full right now, and a lot of teams have stepped up. Obviously, you know, to have it in Canada, you're dealing with a 70-cent dollar now, which would be in these tough economic times everyone's dealing with, that would be kind of an extra, I guess, perk that any Canadian team would have wanting to do it. I've asked a couple of managers, why would your people want to host this sort of a tournament? Well, a lot of them said it'd be good for the city, good for our arena, good for our employees, good for everything, just to get back and get working. So those are some of the criteria.
Berkey, we'll turn it over to you.
I want to ask you a story going back, Coley. First off, thanks for coming on with us. But so you won the Cup in 94. Congratulations. And Mike Keenan left the Rangers after that. You took over as head coach, and I was at your playoff game. You were playing the Quebec Nordiques, and we had a famous incident involving your player who amazingly survived, and Alexei Kovalev and Craig Willannon. Tell the listeners about this one.
All I know is that Brian Burke came in my office after the game. We'd switched positions. I'm with a team. He's with a league. Now I'm with a league. He's been with teams. He came into my room. We had beaten Quebec. We had a tough year. We had we finished eighth, just squeaked in the playoffs, and Quebec finished first. It was the last time they played in Quebec when we beat them out that year, and they went on to win the cup the next year. They had a pretty good team. And that game, Joe Sakic scored on that power play, you know, that shorthanded rush after Kovalev was like, I'm surprised he lived. You're right, Berkey. Berkey came to my office like Andy Van Halen, looked, and he looked back. Finally blew the whistle, but Joe had scored, and I think it was a 2-on-1, and it was obviously a good goal, but he called it off, and Berkey came in, and he wanted to play the tape. He had to see it, and down the hallway there in the Madison Square Garden, Pierre Lacroix, Mark Crawford, who was the president there, Berkey, from Quebec, the owner.
Marcel Aubu.
Like, they were going crazy. I don't know what they were saying in French, but they were going absolutely crazy. And Berkey came in. He's like, I gotta watch this. And he was actually sweating bullets. And I said, Berkey, it was a great goal. What are you worried about?
Well, what happened was as Kovalev went by Craig Willannon with one hand on a stick just kind of slapped him, kind of batted him on the numbers, and down he went like he got shot. He came back and had a goal and assist in the game, but that was a huge controversy.
And it kept going, Berkey. There's one that never stopped. It went on for years.
That's great.
I hired Andy after that. You accused me of returning a favor, I think, Berkey, when I hired him.
No, I would never do that.
Justin, go ahead.
Coley, I just want to throw myself at your mercy first off. I mentioned to some people you were coming on the show today, and they sent me YouTube videos of you and my father fighting multiple times in the NHL. So I'd just like to throw myself at the mercy of the court here before I ask my questions.
Your dad might have been a finesse player, but he could fight when he wanted to fight. He's one of those guys that scares you because he fought scared. In that fight, he broke my orbital bone with a left. I didn't know he was a lefty.
Whoa. that's a bit of a cheating move, isn't it, being a lefty and people don't know. That's hilarious. Probably not hilarious to you, so I'll move on. My question was just about something you talked about off the top there with Merrick when you're talking about potential host cities. Someone had mentioned Toronto was one of the viable options. We are in Toronto, so I feel obligated to ask, how realistic would it be for games to be played in Toronto coming out of this in a couple months?
Well, when you look, when Steve Mayer and his events group interview the Toronto people and look at each site, the merits that Toronto have are the fact that we did host a tournament there recently, the World Cup, and we dealt with various practice rinks, dealt with various hotels, dealt with the Air Canada Center, now the Scotiabank Center. So it's dealt with dressing rooms, various dressing rooms, dealt with all the issues that we're going to have to deal with a tournament. So that's the step up that Toronto has, or the probably the positives that go on the right side of the page. Plus, it's a 70-cent dollar. There's a number of restaurants right in that square there, a number of they've got a number of five-star hotels within shouting distance. So Toronto has a number of excellent pluses on their side to be one of the hub centers.
We are with Colin Campbell with the National Hockey League. He is the NHL Senior Executive VP of Hockey Operations. I would imagine as everyone sort of wraps their brain around, Coley, what the NHL draft is going to look like, I would imagine you and your colleagues in the NHL would have had a look at the NFL draft yesterday. And if so, what did you take out of it? What did you think of it?
Now, we just discussed that on a call, and for the most part, our people were fairly impressed with how it ran, and there's a couple of things that they would obviously iron out, and it's great that if we do have an early draft, it's something that we can look to and try to improve upon. But at the end of the day, they were very impressed with how they pulled it off. And I talked to Dave Branch, and they had a draft, a similar situation in the OHL. And I think the West and the Quebec are having theirs today, tomorrow, and the next few days. But Dave Branch said theirs went off without a hitch as well. Now, they don't make trades. There's a few things that would be different, obviously. I guess there wouldn't be any booing of Gary, would there? it would be a plus.
I think he likes it though at this stage, don't you, Coley?
Yeah, I think he gets it. I don't know if he likes it, but he wears it fairly well now.
He does. He very much does. Berkey?
So, Coley, you took over the job in 98 as chief disciplinarian and did it for several years. But at one point, you contemplated becoming a general manager. Tell the listeners about that.
I had a few opportunities, Brian. The closest was Philadelphia when Bob Clark stepped down. It came close, and I think, when I took this job, I had no idea what it entailed. I had a couple conversations with you. You had your fill with it, and you were moving on. And I think you had interviewed both with Atlanta and Vancouver at the time, with the positions were open. And I thought it'd be a good place maybe just to get out of coaching for a while. I've been coaching for quite a while, and then just do this for a year or two. And it was close. I actually was on my way to Philadelphia when I changed my mind, but I think the fact that and you made mention of it, Brian, that there's no better person to work for than Gary Bettman, and it's been a great experience working in the NHL, having the ability to get involved in rules and working with the GMs and hosting GM meetings. And I know one thing you also said to me, make sure you're prepared, and you were right about that for the GM meetings. And we do a lot of work going into every GM meeting, and thank you for that direction, because that's one of the things that's really important is these GM meetings that we have three times a season. So there's been a couple opportunities, but at the end of the day, it's a good position. I did step down from the discipline. In I think after 14 years of doing it, and as you know, Brian, it's easier now than when you and I did it. When you and I did it, you know, we had to hustle around for tapes. We had no idea what was going on. Your staff was a lot lighter than my staff. I don't know how you did it, but the discipline was a hard one, and just the fact to get the clip, get it next day, get it to the PA, set up the hearing, and do that all before they play the next game. You would have less than 24 hours in a lot of cases to do that. So that was a job in itself, the discipline, and dealing with, as you know, Brian, dealing with these tough old coyotes, you know, the Pat Quinns, the Bob Clarks, the Pierre Lacroix, they weren't easy. And you had lots of battles, so I could go on forever, but that's a little tidbit there.
Coley, how did you deal, I'll phrase it that way. How did you deal with the stress of that role versus a job like you have now? Like, I talked to George Parros 2 days ago, we did on this show, and he said that it doesn't seem like a job that a lot of people would have a lot of longevity in. If you did it for a long time, it wears on you, that role. How were you able to cope with that stress, and was it, in fact, as stressful as it seems it would be from the outside looking in?
Yeah, it's never a pleasant call when you got to call up a manager and tell them you're suspending their player. I remember dealing with Brian on his Stanley Cup run twice. I had to call him up and tell him that we're suspending his, you know, one of his best players, and Chris Pronger. Not that Chris Pronger really did anything that was offside,
Well, you got the second one right, but you screwed us on the first one.
I know it was only one game. It probably should have been five, but some of Berkey's defenses. I wish we would have taped that. They were pretty humorous, some of his defenses. but I won't get into some that were really a little bit, maybe they weren't even legal, Berkey, some of the things you did in your defense. But anyways, I guess you had an in there, having done the job for a while, and then you're on the other side of the fence. But yeah, it was stressful. There's no doubt about it. I remember one situation where Darian Hatcher broke, and Berkey dealt with that with the Detroit-Colorado series and the Lemieux situation on the hit. You get in these emotional series, and we're on right at the end of the season. Darian Hatcher broke Jeremy Roenick's jaw, and Dallas had a tough time getting by Edmonton for a couple years in the playoffs, and so I suspended. I called up Bob Gainey, and I suspended Hatcher for two remaining games, which were really nothing, but the first five playoff games. It was the longest suspension in the playoffs ever, and at that point in time. And he was one of their best players, Hatcher, their captain. And I said, okay, I'm going to have a battle with Bob Gainey. And I had played with Bob in junior. I know Bob very well. We're good friends. But it doesn't really matter in this job if you're friends or not. And I called him up and I told him I was ready for the exchange. He said, well, that's rather tough, severe, but we'll deal with it. I think that was one thing I noticed with managers, you know, instead of hooting and hollering and screaming and complaining, they would deal with it, park it like it was an injury and just move on. And I found that general managers like Brian was the same way. He understood it. Lou Lamoriello, Bob Gainey. You deal with it. It comes your way. You deal with it, and you move on. And that was one of the things that I really recognized with these managers on how they dealt with some of these things. Where we had other guys, and I won't tell you names, just scream forever, and they would win, park it, and it probably went against their clubs the way they dealt with this.
I am curious. Justin just mentioned George Parros, who we had on the program a couple of days ago. And we know that George doesn't make his decisions in a vacuum. He consults with everybody around him, his staff, other people in the NHL as well. How often would you talk to George Parros, considering, you know, as you mentioned, much like Berkey here on this program, you had the sheriff's badge once upon a time yourself?
Well, I tell George, we had a lot of conversations earlier on. And I said, George, you know, I don't even know if it's fair to call us. I'm a little bit more old school when it comes to hitting that. And I said, you guys have got to set your standards and stay with your standards within and all your decisions. So lean on your staff and keep talking to your staff as much as you can. You know, Damon Echevarrieta, Patrick Burke, Stephen Quintal. And you're going to have differences, but you guys have to be consistent with all your decisions. And if you start coming out to us, they'll call us the odd time, but we try to stay away. We see things, and we give them a heads up in New York and things that they might sneak by them, just to make sure that they saw it, because we're watching the same game as them in a different way. We had a lot of like I guess you would call it some platform discussions earlier on, but now, you know, George will touch base every now and then, but for the most part, they've got a pretty good staff with Ray Whitney and the group of them. So, and still, it's a hard one. And I'll get guys. The one thing that we put in place when I left the job and I told Brendan he should do is put in the 48-hour rule, where managers cannot call you and lobby, because the lobbying is a killer. And Brian will tell you that too. When I did the job, the lobbying is immense. Like, it goes right up and down from ownership right down to assistant coaches and back up, and even the media lob, fans lobby. They, as I said, they all see it one way, and when you get to the playoffs, it gets so much worse in the playoffs.
As the stakes are higher, certainly. Wish we had more time. Coley, thanks as always for stopping by. I know it's a busy time for the league despite there being no games right now. I know you're hustling, you're busy, you're on Zoom calls. We appreciate you parking some time with us today.
Thanks a lot, for guys, and good luck with your show. I know it's not that easy without games going on, but thanks a lot. Take care.